Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We are broadcasting live from the 2015 National Rural and Small Town Mission Conference of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin on our website, kfuo.org, and look for the sponsor section. There you'll find the CUW logo in the sponsor section. Click on that. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin, all the great things they have to offer, great programs, education, and the ways that that they support the church, really, too, as well. Go find out more. Concordia University Wisconsin on our website, kfuo.org. Well, as mentioned, we are broadcasting live from the Rural and Small Town Mission Conference. It's an annual conference that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod puts on to support those rural and small town congregations that make up over 50% of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, an opportunity for networking and learning about resources in the Synod and learning from one another as well. One of the neat resources available to Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregations and families is the Wittenberg Academy. Joining me at the table today, Mrs. Jocelyn Benson, head teacher at Wittenberg Academy. Mrs. Benson, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thank you, Andy. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It was it's fun to get to learn about all these resources, and I've heard of Wittenberg Academy. It's fun to get to have a chance to sit down and talk about what is Wittenberg Academy, how long have you been there, and what you love about it. So tell us a little bit about the history of Wittenberg Academy.
Sure. Wittenberg Academy began officially as an entity 5 years ago. We are in our fourth year of teaching, and Wittenberg Academy has the opportunity to serve families all over the world. We serve a lot of homeschool families, but we also serve a growing number of brick and mortar schools. We want to support the work that Lutheran schools are doing. We can support them in a variety of ways by offering a class here and there. Or say, for example, a school is K through 6, but they would like to be K through 8. They can utilize Wittenberg Academy to add 7th and 8th grade back on, or perhaps on for the first time. So it's an exciting thing. We know that Lutheran education is a very vital thing. Luther talked about Lutheran education being important not only for church, but also for state. And we look around and we see that need every single day. So Wittenberg Academy started out of that knowledge that access to a Lutheran education is very important. We have this wonderful thing that can also sometimes be not as wonderful, but we have the internet, and the internet allows us essentially to go anywhere. Even if you are out in the middle of nowhere, chances are you have some sort of internet access.
Parts of the world that that don't even have landline phone systems now have internet access.
Isn't it incredible?
Yeah.
So regardless of where you are, almost, I shouldn't say that 100%, but almost regardless of where you are, if you have access to the internet, you have access to Lutheran education. And so Wittenberg Academy started out of that desire to allow families the opportunity to partner with a school, regardless of where they were, so that they could provide their children a Lutheran education.
Thinking back to thinking about, you know, our religious forefathers in Wittenberg and the university there, the teaching that happened there, I wonder if they had any idea how education would change over time and how Lutheran education would change to be able to reach so many families, so many schools, so many communities in the ways that we can today. I mean, that's the exciting thing about Worldwide KFUO is that we're able to reach worldwide. Now, Wittenberg Academy can do the same as well. Can you imagine what it would be like for those professors at that time to think about education being able to reach so far?
Right, absolutely. Well, it's a fascinating thing to consider. You think about the printing press was a relatively new technology at the time of the Reformation, and how that really changed the ball game, you know, for lack of a better metaphor.
Sure. we are in Kansas City.
Exactly. so the opportunity to utilize the technology of our times, you know, Luther, the sermons that he gave, the writings that he did were able to spread far further because of the printing press. I mean, you think about how quickly after he wrote the 95 Theses that all of a sudden people had those in German in their hands. You know, I mean, he had posted them in Latin, but all of a sudden, you know, here they are right here. And the same is true with the internet, that it can equip people. We have so many resources at our fingertips, and yet at the same time, knowing how to use those tools for edification rather than for our detriment is extremely valuable.
So the education, well, the printing press was the technology of the time, the cutting edge technology. Today, internet. What's the technology used for education online? What's the format, or how do things work for education online through Wittenberg?
Sure, absolutely. There are a couple of different components. The students all have online classrooms, and so you have, say, for example, you're taking physics. You have a physics classroom. In that classroom, you will have maybe your readings. You'll have your quizzes. You also have online discussion forums. The students can discuss a question, a problem that they're working through. But then also we utilize, so that would be an asynchronous component.
Okay.
We also have a synchronous component, 1 hour each week. The students meet with their teacher. As I mentioned, we have students all over the world. So
you might be up very early or up very late.
Exactly. And some of our students right now that are overseas are experiencing the fact that they don't have the time change that we just experienced. So the class that was from 10 to 11 p.m. is now 11 to 12 p.m. So it's a fun adventure trying to deal with all of the logistics. But for example, a class was just discussing the Epic of Gilgamesh, okay? And during the live session, you had students West Coast, East Coast, Central, Mountain, and then a student over in Asia. And so we're talking about the deities in the Epic of Gilgamesh, and it's kind of a, you know, an abstract concept for most of us in the United States. But over where this student is, there are temples dedicated to different deities. So all of a sudden, this thing that's very abstract is very real for all of the students in the class. So having that live component allows the students to interact in real time, but having the asynchronous component allows that depth of processing through the discussion forums and allows kind of a central landing place for all of the students throughout the week.
Outstanding. So using this technology, and how would you describe the education that Wittenberg offers? How is it different than many, conventional education or schools that we might be familiar with today?
Sure. Wittenberg Academy uses a classical model of teaching and learning. And in that, there are a lot of different thoughts about what is classical education. And I like to say that a classical education is a Lutheran education. We're looking at the classical liberal arts plus catechesis. Those things go together, and you can and should not be separated. And so our doctrine informs our practice. Our practice reflects our doctrine. So the way we teach, what we teach, how we teach reflects what we believe. You know, we believe that Jesus said, "This is my body." Therefore, we believe that there is absolute truth. Sometimes the way that we find or are able to read about that truth is going back to original sources. Instead of reading about Aristotle, we read Aristotle. You know, so those sorts of things. Utilizing original sources, but also in our questioning, using methods such as the Socratic method. And I obviously could go on and on about all of this, but those are sometimes some of the hallmarks or the highlights that folks might consider when they're thinking about the classical model of teaching and learning. That personal responsibility for one's own learning. We do memorize things. We believe that when we memorize something that we're saying, this is true.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that memorizing the catechism is important. So also is memorizing dates. It grounds us in history. It grounds us and teaches us that things actually happened in time and space from which we can learn.
It also says when we commit something to memory, it also says that it's important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about what you teach at Wittenberg Academy.
I have the privilege of teaching Paideia 1. Actually, just the first two terms of Paideia 1. All of our theology classes are taught by Missouri Synod pastors. So I teach ancient history and ancient literature. We don't separate the two, so we're reading literature and learning history all together. We read, for example, the history of Rome. So we're actually, as we're reading literature, we're also reading the actual history. So it's kind of a fun combination. And then the students' third term, Easter term, have Old Testament theology. So I teach ancient history, ancient literature, and I also teach psychology. I teach psychology Easter term. And instead of just reading about these guys, we actually read the writings of some of the major theorists. And it never ceases to amaze me that students say, wow, people really thought that. And then when they think about the majority of our educational theories were based on the premise that there is no difference between people and animals, then they see, so here is why we are where we are today. But we have to go back and we have to learn history and we have to read these things for ourselves. You know, and not just take other people's word for it.
What are some of the youngest students? What are the youngest students of Wittenberg Academy?
The youngest students that are taught by our faculty, we have some kindergartners that are taking Latin. That is the one class taught by our faculty that we offer for the youngest students. Generally, Pastor Heath Curtis is our Latin teacher, and he generally says, start them in Latin in third grade. But we have some ambitious students that are that are starting earlier, and that's fantastic. So, and then we obviously go all the way up through seniors taught by our faculty. We do offer some classes for adults. In the summer, we offer logic, Latin, and German. Adults can take all of those classes. So it's we try to back up what we say when we say that education learning should be, you know, conception to grave.
Sure. Well, you mentioned earlier that Wittenberg Academy can serve schools, can serve homeschool families. And we're at the Rural and Small Town Mission
Absolutely.
Conference. How can Wittenberg Academy serve those that small school or a congregation? Maybe has some homeschool families in a rural setting, or maybe a small town setting. Maybe they have a small school or an association school. How might Wittenberg serve those homeschool families or those schools?
Absolutely. When the idea of Wittenberg Academy was coming together, one of the main driving forces behind that idea was that there are a lot of families that are, you know, for lack of a better term, out in the middle of nowhere.
Sure.
And so
nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely. Out in the middle of nowhere is fantastic. But with that, they may not have access to a Lutheran school. If they do have access to a Lutheran school, because of dwindling numbers of people that even just live in the area, the possible population and student body sometimes is lower, and that creates a struggle at some time, at some points. And so Wittenberg Academy is then able to come in and say, okay, how can we serve you? You know, maybe you would like to offer Latin, but you don't have a Latin teacher. Maybe you would like to offer logic, but you don't have a logic teacher. We can do that. Or, for example, we have a school in North Dakota. They did not have an algebra teacher. You know, they're a K through 8 school. They didn't have an algebra teacher. And so they're utilizing Wittenberg Academy just for algebra. And the flexibility, as we talked about before, allows for schools to kind of plug our classes in the normal school day without the students having to leave campus. So for schools or families that are seemingly disconnected from everyone else, which is the case with many rural and small town areas, Wittenberg Academy can connect kids, kids that have, that share the same Lutheran confession, not only with those that also live in rural and small town areas, but also with other students all over the world. And so all of a sudden your rural and small town area, becomes much bigger, but you don't lose all of those just fantastically valuable things, that can be gained from living in those small towns and rural areas.
Absolutely. Well, how can we find out more about Wittenberg Academy?
Absolutely. We have a website, www.wittenbergacademy.org. My contact information is on there. You can email me, Mrs. Benson, at wittenbergacademy.org. I'm always happy to answer questions that are not answered on our website. And if you, your congregation would like to learn more, or there's a Lutheran school that would like to learn more, I would strongly encourage you to contact me, and I'll be happy to help out.
Very good. This is Jocelyn Benson, head teacher at Wittenberg Academy. Thanks for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
Thank you, Andy. Good
to be
here.
It's a lot of fun to talk with you. God's peace. Enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thank you.
And we're going to talk with our next guest here in just a moment. It is a fun conference, learning so much, networking with so many folks. And now we're going to talk with someone serving out in the field. And one of our vicars, right? Vicar Steve Strecker, is that right?
Yep.
Steve
Strecker.
Thanks so much for coming over and spending some time. Vicar, where are you serving?
I am serving two congregations, Zion Lutheran Church and Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Laverne and Livermore, Iowa. Two small communities in northern Iowa. Communities of about 300 people in the communities. The congregations are around 110 to 120 members, with, you know, 35 members in church on Sunday morning who couldn't afford a full-time pastor, and that's where I kind of came into the picture in the SMP program.
Well, tell us a little bit about your about your background. So being a member of the community of the one of the congregations, and
actually I was not. Where I grew up was in Whittemore, Iowa, which is about 28 miles away from these two congregations. I was a licensed lay deacon in Iowa District West through a training program through Concordia St. Paul, and I was helping out another pastor who had cancer who was serving these two congregations. And in that process of him retiring and not wanting to do it anymore, they couldn't afford a full-time pastor. They'd been without a full-time pastor for probably 15 years before I got there. Couldn't afford a full-time pastor. So I kind of came in under the guise of Pastor Friedrich, and he kind of led me, and I helped him out on non-communion Sundays doing worship with them. And then I really wanted to do more and to stay more correct theologically. I wanted to become a pastor, and I farm. We have a large farming operation that we have in northern Iowa. So it was hard for me to go off to the seminary and walk away from the farming operation. So I decided the SMP program was probably the best fit for me and these two congregations. And it gave these two congregations a future of where they were going to go. And they knew that they were going to have a pastor into the future. They didn't have to worry about, can we afford a full-time pastor, or who's going to do this in the future for them.
So still farming, too?
Still farming, yep. I still farm full-time.
Farming, studying, serving?
Two congregations, yes.
You're a busy man.
Yes, I'm a busy man. Very busy.
As you're studying, are you studying when you're out in the field, too?
Yes, the technology, I have classes, and I actually do some of my classes from the combine. I can hook up to the internet, and I have my computer and my notebook. I can hook in and watch the class live while it's going on and participate and communicate with the class as it's going on.
Outstanding. That is multitasking.
That is multitasking. A lot of our equipment that we have now in the spring and the fall, it's all auto-steered by computers and GPS, so I can sit there and I'm not actually having to physically drive the machines up and down the field any longer. So it does. The combines, it drives itself up and down the field. The tractors drive themselves, so I have the freedom to look and do other things at that point.
That's amazing. We were just talking about Wittenberg Academy, where students, you know, the K-8 students can be online anywhere in the world and learn. Now, as a student of theology and preparing for pastoral ministry, you can study out in the field, in the combine.
I spend, in the fall takes us about 300 harvest hours to get the harvest done, over about a month time span. So, yes, there's a lot of time spent in the combine. I know last fall, my vicarage supervisor came out and rode in the combine from Concordia Seminary in St. Louis and was just amazed at the technology that we have in the combines. And he was taking selfies in the combine and emailing them back to the seminary in St. Louis. And the professors just really liked that. They enjoyed that. So.
That you can study theology, God's word, even out in the field.
Even out in the field. Absolutely.
Well, very good. What, attending this conference today, what are some things that you're learning along the way, or what do you appreciate about the Rural and Small Town Mission Conference?
That rural ministry is being recognized. I think that's the biggest thing. It's a big part of who we are in the Lutheran Church, and I'm right in the middle of small town America, basically. Mm-hmm. I grew up in it all my life, and I embrace it. I think you connect to the people so much better in a small congregation. I mean, they become family to you. I mean, mm-hmm. really become your family, and they care about what is happening in your life, and you care about what's happening in their life, and, it's special.
Anyone from your congregations get to come along this time?
No, they did not. They did not, because I didn't know for sure if I was going to be able to make it. We had some other issues going on, and I didn't know until the last minute if I was going to be able to come or not, and then it worked out that I could come. So,
what do you think are some of the challenges that our rural or small-town parishes face?
I think just keeping their spirits alive and their hope alive, their congregation is going to continue. I think that's the biggest thing, because too often they look to the future and say, okay, where are we at, and are we going to survive, and how many numbers do we need to survive? Mm-hmm. And I've been blessed. The two congregations that I serve financially, it's not been a struggle. Other than they can't afford a full-time pastor, that's taken a huge burden off of their shoulders. But just the fact that I can lessen that financial blow to them, and we still keep their doors open on Sunday morning, and we have Vacation Bible School, we have Sunday School, we have confirmation. We do everything that all the other churches do. We just do it on a smaller scale.
And ministry of the word is still happening regularly. That it's not just about keeping doors open, but what's happening inside those doors. And then going out throughout those doors to into the community as
right.
well.
Right, and that's one thing I've been really encouraged them to do is to outreach themselves out into the community and bring those in. And that's works. I know our Vacation Bible School that we have at Zion and Laverne, we'll run anywhere from, 38, 39 to 50 children in Vacation Bible School. And this is in a town of 250 people. And they just go out to the community and they invite children, they invite families to come in and be a part of this. And it's good because a lot of those children who have come to Vacation Bible School then come to confirmation class, then parents then come to church.
Outstanding. Are there any sessions at this conference that you're really hoping to make it to, anything or anything that you've learned so far at the rural and small town?
The ones that I've been to so far are good about, how you reach out to the community. Mm-hmm. That was a good one I went to yesterday, reaching out to the community, how we connect with the community. I know my wife and I have tried to do that because we do live 28 miles away mm-hmm. from the community. It's not my home community where I grew up. So we try and go to, and at the two churches I serve, I have five different school districts that are involved.
Wow.
So one of the things my wife and I try and do is we go to all of the science fairs. We go to all of the children's programs in the fall. We go to them in the spring. We try and go to all of the functions we can. We go to ball games if we can. Just to be out there and be a part of those children. And the look on their faces when you walk in and they mm-hmm. see you at their science fair and you look at their science fair project, that's precious.
Absolutely. To see their vicar there and
yes.
Know that
to see that I'm there and that I care.
Mm-hmm.
And too often we don't. Too often we think of church on Sunday morning and that's it. And I think it goes so far beyond that. It's so much more than just church on Sunday morning.
Sure. As we're equipped with the Word on Sunday morning, as we're fed with the Word and nourished, you know, with Word and sacraments, sent out and into the community to proclaim that good news of Jesus, to be witnesses wherever we are, whether it's at school, at work, in the field.
Right. In the field. Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I try and encourage the members of the congregations, both congregations. You know, and we have a lot of older members, and we have a lot of younger members because we are blessed. I mean, we'll have, we're at Zion, we'll have, you know, anywhere from 8 to 10 children in children's sermon on Sunday morning. So we're blessed to have a lot of children. We've got a few young families who have had a lot of kids. So we're blessed to have kids. We're a small congregation, but we do have a lot of kids, which is a little unusual. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, there's no kids, there's no baptisms, you know, it's just funerals, unfortunately.
Well, thanks be to God for the continuation of ministry of the Word there at the congregations. Remind me of your congregations again.
Zion Lutheran Church and Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Laverne and Livermore, Iowa.
Laverne and Livermore, Iowa. Well, Vicar, thanks so much for being our guest today. Vicar Steve Stricker, thanks so much for being our guest on Faith and Family today.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll continue the conversation with more guests here at the Rural and Small Town Mission Conference of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're broadcasting from Kansas City, Missouri. I'm Andy Bates. We're going to take a quick break. And stick around, more Faith and Family right after this.
University Mequon, Wisconsin overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We are broadcasting live from the National LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission Conference and visiting with the folks attending the conference and networking, learning, growing, and joining me at the table today, two guys that probably should not be on the air together at the same time, the Reverend Bart Day, Director of the Office of National Mission for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and President of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Missouri District. We've got Pastor Lee Hagen joining us at the table today. Dr. Lee Hagen joining us at the table today. Gentlemen, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thank you, Andy. Great to be with you.
Yeah, thanks, Andy.
Good to have some time to chat with you about what is rural and small town mission. What is, and I got to talk with Pastor Kohlbaum this morning and Amy Gertz about their work, what they do at rural and small town mission, the office out here in Concordia, Missouri, beautiful part of the state. But how significant are those rural and small town parishes? How do they make up the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod? What role do they play in our church body?
Well, it's actually kind of interesting that we got Pastor Hagen on with us. Back in those days, he was just the pastor in Concordia.
just a pastor
before he became the big district president. But rural small town had existed prior to the restructure in 2010. It was in a part of World Mission under the National Mission component. And on the campus at St. Paul Lutheran High School in Concordia, Missouri, at what's called the Spiffy Institute, there was an office there for rural and small town. There was some part-time work that was going on, and so very early coming into the restructure, because rural and small town congregations make up over 50% of the congregations in the Missouri Synod and over 50% of our membership, we recognized early on that we needed to give more energy, more effort, more support, and resources specifically to rural congregations to address the opportunities that they have to address some of those challenges. And at that time, Pastor Hagen was serving there at St. Paul High School, or at this church there, and was able to step in on an interim basis to really help us jumpstart what now has fully become this full-time staff in rural and small town. He helped us to identify some of those early resources, or maybe we should say expand some of those early resources that other individuals had been working on for years. So there is a real heart for the rural communities in the LCMS, the work that they're doing. They're quite unique. The congregation Pastor Hagen served is sort of like a megachurch in a rural congregation, and there are quite a few of those rather unique congregations that are quite large in a small community. And then other congregations are smaller and reflect the size of their community. So they have unique opportunities, unique challenges, and conferences like this give opportunity for those people to gather together, to hear about resources and programs that are available to them, to spend time talking through issues that are unique to rural and small town ministry, and to build one another up.
Dr. Hagen, why was it key from your perspective to develop this office and provide support and resources for our rural and small town parishes?
I think a lot of our congregations in RSTM settings really struggle with, in some ways, a self-esteem issue. Not just their congregations, but their communities. A lot of them feel like their communities are deprived of resources that are more available in the inner city and suburban settings. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that our synod was concerned about what was going on in our small towns really was just a great initial step to let them know that somebody cares. But then also to talk about the mission opportunities that exist. Our rural communities have changed dramatically. It's not all this kind of Norman Rockwell-esque picture of large families working on the farm with the meal spread out over the pickup truck's bed. Today we see in a lot of settings a lot of different ethnic groups, African immigrants, Asian immigrants, as well as Hispanic immigrants. Every county in Missouri is more than 50% unchurched. And like Pastor Day was saying, most of the synod is, or a majority of the synod is in rural and small town settings. And so, you know, part of the theme for the conference, standing in the harvest fields are white. They are ripe for the harvest. There are opportunities. And so, you know, one of the things that we never want to hear, it's kind of like the old hymn, "Let none hear you idly saying, there is nothing I can do while the souls of men are dying and the master calls for you." There are so many opportunities, even for the small little parish out on the prairie, to reach out into their community and to share God's love, to share those works of mercy and to bear witness to Christ.
I made a little joke at the beginning that the you two should not be on the air together, and a lot of folks don't realize how you are both good friends. But the key here about working together is that this is Synod District, the Rural and Small Town Mission folks all, and partnering with these small congregations, or these small town congregations, rural congregations, all working together in partnership, that, you know, providing resources, support for one another, networking and supporting one another, working together. That's what Synod is, right? Working together, walking together, right?
Absolutely. And the Office of National Mission is here to serve the 35 districts. Mm-hmm. And with the districts, in partnership with them, their congregations and their schools and their workers. So collaboration and ministry, doing things together, is really the best way. It's the only way to be most effective. We do not do ministry out of 1333 South Kirkwood Road as a bureaucratic headquarters. We are there to help support the real ministry that is happening on the ground with the districts in the lead. They have the mission priorities in their districts. They have the vision. They have the strategic plans, whether it's rural or urban or inner city, suburban. We are to come alongside and partner with the work that they're already doing.
Dr. Hagen, as a parish pastor, now district president, how key is it to that local parish that to have this collaboration, this working together, this partnership on all levels, from synod to district to the local congregation?
Well, I think the purpose in forming the synod is a great example and lesson for how we can collaborate today, because part of the purpose in forming the synod was was the national church body could do things that individually one congregation could not. And when we start to see the possibilities of what the Lord can accomplish when congregations work together and collaborate, we have such greater capacity than when we're working individually, when we're sticking to our own little silos. And so, you know, a lot of congregations are struggling having the programs that they think of from 30 years ago, and they're hesitant to ask for help and support. And so there are other ways of teaching the faith to children besides Sunday school. Some congregations will say, oh, we're not able to have a Sunday school any longer. We just don't have enough kids. Well, there are other ways to teach the faith, and maybe it is partnering with another congregation to do so. Maybe it's even partnering with a larger congregation or a suburban congregation that has somebody like you and your wife, Andy, who have a background in children's ministry. Now, wouldn't it be great to see some of the suburban churches twice a year adopting a small town congregation and going out and putting on a one Saturday kind of a VBS or it's for a whole for families. There's lots of ways that we can partner together and collaborate. And, you know, this kind of an event is just a picture of this is what it looks like when we work together, congregations, districts, synod.
The great part, I think, of this conference is that many of those congregations in rural America feel rather isolated, or they think that the challenges and the struggles they have are unique and that nobody else is there with them, nobody else understands. Certainly the synod doesn't understand, or the district, or, you know, big churches. But they can come to a place like this and understand that there are a lot of congregations facing those same challenges, but seeing them as opportunities, and they can really collaborate. They can hear from one another, other people who are in the trenches with them. Hey, this is what we did when we didn't have enough kids to have Sunday school. Or this is what we did when our, you know, school that was shared by four congregations, but two of them started to really struggle. How we work through that so we could sustain our school. So a lot of sharing of really good practice at a conference like this.
What are some of the some of those best practices or those things that you've seen over the years from some of those small congregations or rural and small town parishes?
I mean, I'll say the president over here can share, but I think a couple come to mind for rural small town. I think that RSTM is one of the leaders in addressing the question of sort of worker priest. You know, what will parish ministry with a full-time pastor look like in rural America going forward? That's a challenge for the synod. How will those congregations be served who individually cannot support and sustain a pastor, but they want a pastor, they desire faithful word and sacrament ministry? What does that look like? The other thing I think that is being addressed at a conference like this is, how do congregations in rural America begin in very formal ways to collaborate, or even to talk about merging together so that maybe the three-point parish, maybe they can't survive as three individual congregations, but they can merge without losing all of their own identity and their own history and love for their congregations in a way that they can sustain and still serve the larger community or county where those three congregations are. I think those are best practices really around worker priest and around merging, or what congregations, multi-point congregations in rural America will look like in the future. There's been some pretty cutting-edge best practice things that have been talked about at this conference for the last several years.
Dr. Hagan?
I think the webinar series that RSTM has been providing for several years now has been a great place to learn about some of those best practices. And so, you know, they have each month a webinar. It's on a specific topic. They're all archived, but it's a great way to learn about, you know, what are some ways that congregations have been out on, can we say cutting edge in rural ministry
together?
Okay, all right.
Cutting edge might be you know, cutting, that might be harvest time when things are getting cut, right?
Absolutely. But what are some of the ways that we've seen leadership in community engagement, in funding models for small town schools, or, you know, it's just a host of different topics. And so it's been a great way to learn from practitioners, people that are out there, and they're small town pastors, they're small town lay leaders and teachers. And so, one of the ways that I was really blessed as a small-town parish pastor was hearing from others and sometimes borrowing their ideas.
Yes.
A little sanctified borrowing. It's not stealing. It's sanctified borrowing. And taking them and putting those best practices into practice in my setting.
And that's kind of the key part of this conference is there are lots of presenters and there are a lot of things to learn from the presenters, from the speakers at this conference, but also the networking aspect, visiting with one another and learning, oh, yeah, we're kind of struggling with that right now. How did that work out for you? What worked well for you in order to address that issue? Or maybe there's something, you know, your community has a similar need. How did you as a congregation reach out and serve in that community? Or how did you engage the community that has similar attributes? Those types of things. Well, what are you guys looking forward to in the coming year in rural and small town mission or in your respective work at the Office of National Mission, Missouri District?
I'm most looking forward to the Engaging Your Community events that Todd and Amy host all over the Synod. What's been interesting, I think, over the last few years and what I look forward to in the future is that you sort of think that rural small town ministry is only sort of in the heartland of the Midwest, and that's certainly true. But these Engaging Your Community events, they're starting to host all over in saltwater districts on the East Coast, on the West Coast, because, I mean, you move into places like Northern California, and this is extremely rural, agrarian, and they're facing rural and small town issues. So I think what's most exciting is to see this work not just remaining sort of in the Midwestern heartland of the Missouri Synod, but really moving into districts along the saltwater that we tend to think of just as suburban, urban districts. Mm-hmm. But they all have rural and small town work, and they're starting really to engage in those districts and expand the work there, which I think is going to be a great blessing.
In terms of the Missouri District, one of the things we're looking at is an initiative where we have 300 congregations in the Missouri District, and we would love to see in 2017, so I'm stretching it out 2 years, but there be an initiative where every congregation of the district, all 300, would commit to engaging their community in one new way. And so I've had conversations with Pastor Kolbaum about how RSTM can help in that, because we know we're going to have to train facilitators to work with these congregations to move beyond an idea towards implementation. Because a lot of times we've all been to conferences and workshops where we get these great ideas, but nothing ever happens. And that's what we want, is we want to see this moved to this out into the harvest field, that it's not just an idea that's gathers dust on a shelf in a binder, but that it's something that's lived out in the lives of people in a specific plan of the congregation. And so I think RSTM can be a real advocate for that. We are looking over the next couple years to try to have, we think, one Engaging Your Community event in 2016 and one in 2017 with RSTM. So those are real positive events for our congregations and lay leaders.
Very good. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for taking time out of the conference. I know you have lots of folks to visit with here and presentations to get to. I appreciate your time sharing with me and our listeners your perspective on rural and small town mission. The Reverend Bart Day, Director of the Office of National Mission for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Pastor Day, thanks for being our guest today.
Always great to be with you, Andy. Thank you.
The Reverend Dr. Lee Hagen, President of the LCMS Missouri District. Dr. Hagen, thanks for being our guest today.
Was it okay that we were on together at the same time? I mean, you weren't so sure about this,
I know,
Andy.
Sometimes you guys just have a little too much fun when I see you working together.
We were well behaved.
You were. I was impressed. Good job, guys.
Thanks for the opportunity. Maybe you'll have us back even.
I would love to have you guys back. You can come back anytime.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for being my guest. We're going to take a short 60-second break. When we come back from that break, we'll wrap up here at the On Faith and Family here at the Rural and Small Town Mission Conference. I'm Andy Bates on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news. Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We are broadcasting live from the 2015 National Rural and Small Town Mission Conference in Kansas City, Missouri. The theme, Standing in the Harvest Fields. Great conference, learning from so many people, and it's encouraging to see so many of our brothers and sisters in Christ networking and sharing ideas with one another sharing about the blessings in ministry as well, the blessings of being a rural or small town mission or a congregation. It's great to see that encouragement from one another and all the folks we've gotten to talk with today. I want to let you know about some programs coming up next week on Faith and Family on Monday. This will be a unique opportunity. You might have heard of the group Lost and Found, the Lutheran duo, musicians who have traveled around the country, really around the world, sharing the good news of Jesus in song and having a little fun doing it. We're going to talk with Lost and Found, the music team, as they wrap up their farewell tour this year. Many years of serving congregations, many youth events as well. Then we're going to talk with them on Monday on Faith and Family, hear a little bit of their music, hear their stories from the road. Hope you can join us for that. And we'll also give thanks for our veterans next week on Veterans Day on Wednesday. Hope you can join us for that as well. It's been a lot of fun. We've got a couple of minutes left. We're going to talk with one of our guests, one of the presenters here at the Rural and Small Town Mission Conference about his life and service in rural mission here in the rural congregation. So joining me at the table today, the Reverend Kenton Bertel from Mount Calvary Lutheran Church in Holdridge, Nebraska. Is that right?
That's right.
Well, welcome, Pastor Bertel. Thanks so much for coming by to talk with us for a couple of minutes about your service in serving congregations and what you're talking about here at the Rural and Small Town Mission Conference. Tell us a little bit about Mount Calvary Lutheran Church in Holdridge, Nebraska.
Well, Holdridge is a town of about 5,000 people, and I've served Mount Calvary for 15 years, and it's a very diverse congregation, and it's an exciting place to be. We're really seeking to engage our community and disciple our young people through confirmation, and that's what I've been speaking about today. So
very good. What are some of the challenges that that rural or small town congregations, a congregation like Mount Calvary, faces? What are some of the challenges? What are some of the advantages of being a small town congregation?
I think, you know, the relationships that people have, people know each other.
Mm-hmm. And everybody knows everybody.
Yeah,
right?
Well, a little bit that way sometimes. but opportunities for us to engage our community. I think that's been the biggest challenge at Mount Calvary, as well as the biggest joy. When I first arrived, we were pretty well closed in and inwardly focused as a congregation. And we have really worked to engage our community, and we've gotten out there and we found out the needs of our community by prayer walks and interviewing people and talking with leaders in our community, and we found out, wow, there's a lot of people that have some real needs in our community, and now as a congregation we're seeking to show that mercy.
Well, what are some of the ways that you've gotten to know the community, or what are some of the needs of the community, and how have you met those needs and engaged them?
We found that a lot of people struggle to pay the rent and their utilities and gas in their cars. And so what we have is a Christian charity fund that we house for our ministerial association over the whole county. And we give away about $30,000 a year. And so we have a number of people coming in needing help that way. And then we found out that food stamps doesn't cover a lot of things. And so what we do is we started a caring cupboard for those people. And we offer what food stamps doesn't offer, toilet paper and diapers and laundry detergent and those kind of things. And it's amazing how God's blessed that. And then we have volunteers that come and help out with that. And it's amazing how many people want to know about Jesus. And we've started a community garden now, and so our congregation is really active in terms of extending the love of Christ with people in our community.
That was my next question. How has this changed the congregation? How has this changed the individuals, the families of the congregation? What have they learned? What have they gained from it?
The mission is real. It's right there. And they hear the stories of the people that come in, and they hear about the brokenness and the needs. And there's a level of excitement and passion that this is what God's called us to do now. And when we did our study of our community and trying to find the needs, it was just clear, overwhelming. It's like, wow, I think God's trying to say here, we need to get out and care for those in need. And now when people are coming in, we serve over several hundred people every year, and it's exciting because some of those people are really in need of hope, and that's what we have to give them.
How has the community responded? How much have they learned about Mount Calvary Lutheran Church in Holdridge, Nebraska?
Probably the best way to answer that is now we continue to get letters of recommendation. And what I mean by this is Why'd you come here? As well, my friend said, if there is a need, I needed to come. And we'll have people that come because they have relationship issues, or they're in an abusive relationship, or they need help with a bill, or we even have people now that will help with a simple budget, or we have people that help with planning meals on a budget, shoestring. And so we have, you know, ladies that do that. And so that's been exciting.
Would you say through those opportunities, through the caring cupboard, the community garden, the other ways that you've engaged your community, there are more people now hearing the good news of Jesus in Holdrege, Nebraska?
Absolutely. We have people that have never heard it before. I was sharing with one lady, and she's an addict, and we work with a lot of people that have a lot of brokenness. And I'm sharing the story of Adam and Eve in creation, and she goes, I've never heard that story before. And I'm like, wow, this is exciting, because I bet you've never heard about Jesus and the cross and the empty tomb. And she hadn't. And when she got done, I told the story of Jesus. She goes, I'll never forget. I've never experienced love like that. My dad never could love me that way. So.
Well, Pastor Bertzell, thank you so much for being our guest today on Faith and Family, sharing your story with us about the ministry at Mount Calvary Lutheran Church and how the good news is being proclaimed there as you engage your community and being a part of the Rural and Small Town Mission Conference. Thanks for being our guest on Faith and Family today.
Thank you.
I'm Andy Bates. That does it for me. Broadcasting live the Rural and Small Town Mission Conference. I'll send it back to the studio, Buzz. Thanks for keeping things in order there.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.